Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, Clive, big honour to have you, as ever, on the show and the podcast. Hello, hello, hello. We're both actually sort of in Yorkshire at the moment. I'm in Sheffield. You're somewhere in... somewhere else.
I'm at my mother-in-law's.
I know. Very tasteful. I was going to say, very tasteful backdrop.
It is. It is.
Appreciate, I know. I wasn't joking.
I've never had kind of a floral bouquet behind me, as I've spoken before. I might start this. So.
Yeah, I think it could be a new thing. It brings out a whole new element of your personality, I think. So, Clive, so we've seen this week, obviously, the fall of Afghanistan to the Taliban. Now, you're, unlike most Labour MPs, you have actually served in Afghanistan. You're an army veteran. It is notable that in the parliamentary debate, you're the only veteran of that conflict who wasn't actually called to speak. And now that's been reported in the media. Can we just quickly, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about the fact that you were not called to speak in a debate about, obviously, a topic you know from first-hand experience?
I think it was unfortunate. You know, there are two schools of thought, cock-up and conspiracy. I imagine, you know, people will take from it what they will. I think it was careless at best, if honest, because by doing that on such a controversial issue, war is always controversial, quite rightly, and, you know, an ongoing issue like that, if you are going to take out dissenting voices who have had experience there, then you're kind of asking for people to see conspiracy rather than cock up. I mean, I've spoken to the speaker. I believe from his perspective, it was a mistake. It wasn't meant to happen. But obviously that's the speaker himself. There are, you know, other elements in Parliament, but you know, look, I'm not going to go into it. It is what it is. I've spoken to the speaker. I'm happy with what he's told me. But it's unfortunate. And it does add to the sense that the debate in Parliament was highly skewed. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, look, there were other voices, let's be clear. But I think the overwhelming number of voices in Parliament were those who were supporting so-called Western values, liberal interventionism, and saw this as a... whilst they may sort of seen the withdrawal as a mistake itself, how it had been conducted, I think they were very much supportive of the whole notion of going into other countries and trying to impose the will of the West, the values of the West, onto the global and international security scene.
What are your thoughts?
And when I say values of the West, I say the stated values of the West. Yeah, I think you understand what I mean. Maybe we can open it out a bit, but yeah.
I think, no, it's an important distinction. Look, you, as I've said, you served in Afghanistan. Just tell me, what are your thoughts about this week's events as someone who's been there on the ground?
I think I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for the veterans. I have heard them on the media. I think it's a sense of, of betrayal. A sense of what was it for? Why did we go? I was asking those questions whilst I was there and long afterwards. But I think for a lot of people, it's a rude awakening. I think the futility of it in many ways. There'll be people who say, well, you know, we stopped, you know, the Afghanistan being used as a terrorist base. Well, I don't think that's true necessarily, in the sense that where we are now and in the past, possibly, it had been suppressed, but it didn't get to the causes of why we have international terrorism. And that's part of the problem. You know, look, there are bad people that commit crimes and commit terrorism. But, you know, the issue I have is I was really interested by this kind of, and have been interested by this rush to the defense of Afghan human rights recently. And I just think, where have you been the last 20 years? You know, I was the chair of the all-party parliamentary group on on drones. It's a very established and well-funded APPG. And we had whistleblowers from the US drone program who were openly telling us that, you know, that without further authorization, you were able to eliminate hostiles with seven civilians around, if necessary, bystanders. We know that 90% of the people killed in drone attacks over the last 20 years in Afghanistan have been innocent bystanders, mainly civilians. Where was that compassion? Where were those Western liberal values while that was happening and is happening all around the world? You know, you know, if you want to talk about democracy and human rights and values, I want to talk about them. I very much do. You know, we're fighting against the Tories from eroding our own here in this country. But if you're going to do that, then you need to kind of step up. And I just don't think, given the wars that are being waged through drones, through special forces over which we have no say, there's no transparency. You know, it just kind of rings hollow, unfortunately, when you look at the millions of people who have been killed in that war on terror. Well, you know, if millions of people have been killed in that, in a war on terror, many of them civilians, then who's committing the terror? I mean, are there really kind of good guys over here, bad guys over there? It really does feel like shades of grey.
The narrative around the war in Afghanistan is that the West essentially was playing a civilizing role, bringing democracy and human rights, a great sacrifice to Afghanistan, that this was being turned into democracy, and this is a great retreat, which has essentially handed, as a consequence, Afghanistan over to the Taliban. What's your take in terms of the whole narrative and how, I suppose, the occupation of the country for the last two decades is generally presented?
It feels very much like a similar narrative that's being kind of that's being expressed by some trying to, who have for many years and are continuing to try to do it now, to rewrite colonial and imperial history, that we went to Africa, that we went to the subcontinent, that we went to China, to Southeast Asia, to Australia, to New Zealand. We went to these countries to civilize them, to bring the light of democracy and enlightenment to them. But, you know, the fact of the matter is we brought slavery, we brought, you know, mass death, we brought poverty, we brought robbery, we took from them. It's a far more complicated picture. And I feel that there are overtones of imperial overtones in this notion that we have a right to go into other countries and give our values, values which, frankly, on the surface sound fantastic. And I'm someone who believes in those values of liberalism, of looking after each other, of democracy, of transparency, of accounting, all of those things I do. But I understand that behind that and beneath that, there is a deep history, which is a lot more darker and complex than the one that we kind of talk about. So I have a big issue with this notion of us being able to go in some kind of post-imperial fashion into countries around the world and dictate to them. The other thing is, when I went, I admit, like many people in this country, not all, there are some who are more perhaps enlightened than myself, but when I went into the army, I genuinely thought that I was going to stop terror and I was going to help rebuild Afghanistan. And, you know, I look, the terror is still there, whether it's in Afghanistan or not, if you want. And the country is one of the poorest in the world, you know, in terms of food security. It's the second most vulnerable on the planet. It's got 40% of people have no job. 70% of people live below the poverty line. You know, this is a country that after 20 years of Western occupation and development is still in that state. So I do question why we were there, what we did, what we achieved. I'm sure there were lives changed. You know, there was a rekindling. Let's be really clear here, a rekindling of women's rights in Afghanistan. We didn't bring that. That started in the 1920s in Afghanistan. You know, there's a long history of women's rights and liberation of women in Afghanistan. Didn't start with us coming in there with these with notions of liberation. They were doing that themselves. But yes, we did contribute to that. So there were good things that happened, but there are also a lot of bad things that happened there. And I guess from my perspective, as someone who went over there hoping to make a difference, I understand now that terrorism and many of the world's ills are symptoms of a deeper malaise, which is the kind of economic system that we have, political and economic system in this country, in this on this planet, which I think actually drives, it's driving the climate crisis, mm-hmm. it's driving insecurity, it drives poverty and inequality. It's an extractionist economic policy with institutions globally which enhance that. And I think ultimately much of the many of the problems in the world could be solved by other means rather than simply bombing them, which does seem to be the kind of default setting for many in the West when it comes to dealing with developing countries.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Just a couple of other things. I mean, we all are very familiar with the atrocities and human rights abuses committed by the Taliban. What is less understood, for example, is take the Afghan local police, 30,000 strong pro-government militia, murdered civilians, committed fraud, engaged in theft, rape, kidnapping, drug trafficking and extortion. That's according to Human Rights Watch. Children being recruited as soldiers. The Coast Protection Force, backed by the CIA, murdered huge numbers of innocent civilians, Afghan detention centres, torture, suffocation, electrocution. I spoke to Anand Gopal, who's a brilliant author, who's been in Afghanistan extensively. He said there were dozens of Abu Ghraibs there. Airstrikes between 2017 and 2020, the civilian death toll went up by 300%. And according to UN data, in the last 5 years, 40% of all civilian casualties from airstrikes were children. I mean, what do you think of that? You know, these were crimes committed by our side. I mean, by our allies and by the US Air Force.
Yeah. And there's a convenient, it seems, kind of narrative in the media, which is very one-sided, which only wants to talk about what's happened elsewhere in the world. Sorry about this. Sorry, I can't.
Sorry. No worries. Sorry.
I'm doing a lot, Mother. Sorry.
Be quick, I promise.
Do you want to go past? Come past, Kate. Sorry about that. Is that all we have to cut and edit?
Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it. It's kind of endearing anyway, to be honest, but we can just edit it.
There you go. It's good. So she needs a pink dress. I do apologize.
Oh, well, that's better. I need
She fell out of a tree. She fell out of a tree.
Oh, is she all right?
Yeah, I think she is. Oh, she seems her. Okay.
Bless. Sorry, go on. Yes.
Sorry. No, look, I think one of the things if you look at the front pages of our newspapers, if you look at our media coverage, you know, it has been so scant on looking at the entirety, the complexity of what's happening there. There's been some research done very recently about the amount of coverage of these atrocities around the world in terms of, for example, Britain's foreign policy with Saudi Arabia, with our links to Oman. These are totalitarian, brutal regimes, repressive regimes. But we happen to have three listening bases. GCHQ has three listening bases in Oman. So we support and help them. We support and help the Saudi government, a government that's tortured and murdered and cut up, you know, a journalist in its embassy. So, it's about joining the dots together and about understanding that there isn't this notion that we are the good guys and they're the bad guys, you know, the dark ops, the drone programs, the bombings, the civilian deaths. These are on our hands. Now, you know, does that make the Taliban the good guys? Of course it doesn't, you know, but it just requires politicians and the public. And I would love to see our media, present company excluded, have that complexity in their deliberations, in their analysis, in their coverage, so that the British public can make a more honest and informed decision when it comes to going to war or liberal intervention in other countries or our foreign policy with Saudi Arabia and others, a country which is, you know, causing millions to die from starvation in the war that it's waging by proxy in there. So, you know, I just think it's about having a level playing field of the information and what's happening so people can make an informed choice rather than this quite juvenile approach, which is, you know, very, very, very blinkered. And that needs to change. You know, just the list that you read out there, I think is part of that.
Just quickly, because you're with your family, but it struck me the parliamentary debate completely divorced from reality, because there was almost this sense of Britain could have somehow gone alone, which was basically the position of some, that either the British government could have coerced Joe Biden into staying, which is, whatever you think of it, ludicrous, but also somehow, you know, maybe the British could have valiantly fought on. And it strips a lot of important context, which just wasn't in the debate. For example, not just the fact that Libya, Iraq and Afghanistan and the so-called war on terror, the number of people who died killed by terrorists in the 16 years up to 2001, more than doubled after the so-called war on terror was launched in 2001, which speaks for itself. It's not just that, it's the specific defeats Britain suffered. Britain was effectively ejected from Basra by Shiite militia in southern Iraq. And then, in order to reverse that humiliation in the eyes of the Americans, sent a troop surge into Helmand province in Afghanistan, and then suffered a pretty terrible experience, and the US Marines had to intervene, and Britain left Afghanistan years before the United States, only keeping a skeleton crew there to train local forces. But that wasn't in the debate. There was no sense of this is what Britain, the defeats Britain has suffered. There was almost this sense of, you know, global Britain could somehow have filled a vacuum. But that's just not... It's just
you're right, Owen. And I think there's a kind of quite a delusional quality to elements of the debate and elements of the coverage, which is that, I mean, listening to Tony Blair this morning talk about, you know, we're on the verge of becoming a second-rate power. Well, verge, brink. I mean, I don't say that because I want Britain to be anything other than a decent country to live in that plays its part in an international community that can tackle things like the climate crisis and other pressing concerns and matters. Of course, I want us to play our role in that. But this notion of us being a power, I just think there's so many hang-ups and throwbacks from this kind of colonial imperial era that Britain once ruled the waves. You know, look, yes, maybe we did in the past, maybe we didn't. But the reality is we're now in the 21st century in an interconnected global community facing an existential threat from the climate crisis, the rise of a gilded age of super billionaires and millionaires who are increasing in power, big tech, big data, artificial intelligence. You know, I just kind of feel to myself this notion that the threats facing humanity are the ones that we are generating ourselves in so many ways through our economic system, our economic policies, and this notion that we are some kind of superpower that can go around with a big stick telling the rest of the world what to do. They've moved on since the 19th century and the 20th century. This is the 21st century. And I just think, you know, the point that you're making, that we seem to be deluding ourselves, that this wasn't, that we weren't defeated in Afghanistan in many ways, that there was in some way that Britain could have gone in and done all these fantastic things without Biden. It's delusional. You know, where was that money going to come from? We're being told we haven't got enough money to pay our nurses after a pandemic. They're on 3%. You know, come on. You know, if you can find the money, if you can talk about finding the money for going into Afghanistan on your own when the Americans are pulling out, but you can't find the money to pay nurses, to pay teachers, there's something quite odd about this and fundamentally wrong. And I think an increasing number of people are beginning to realize that, you know. So, I think, Owen, ultimately, this debate, the debate in Parliament, the way the coverage we've seen, it feels there's an almost hysterical emotional quality to it, which lacks in analysis and reality. And I think your program and others in the alternative media scene are doing a really good job of exposing that.
Clive, we really appreciate it, not least because you are with your family. And I'm glad, though, you weren't able to speak in Parliament, which is, whatever the circumstances, a travesty. So I'm really glad that you've been able to speak freely here about your thoughts, grounded as they are from your own experience. But we really, really appreciate it, as ever. Legend.
Thank you, Owen. Good to speak.
Thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you found that informative, educational, interesting, and I certainly did. Do support us on Patreon to keep the show on the road, /OwenJones84. Leave us some stars, that'd be nice. Spread the word. And I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.